And PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org to learn more about the organization, its mission, its different initiatives, all of its codes of conduct, and everything that the organization has going on for the 2018 year. Also, while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you learn more about myself, Patrick, Jamie, and the whole Freedom Train family. And that way you can stay in tune or in touch with the lineup that we have. And just briefly give you the lineup. Remember, every Monday, you're going to get the Fix Sports Podcast. Every Wednesday, you're going to get the Freedom Train podcast, and every Wednesday, you also get the live broadcast of Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones and Erica Tolbert, and every Thursday, you get Patrick Irvin's show, Lessons from the Screen. So make sure you tune in, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Follow us on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Like our Freedom Train Facebook page. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and now Stitcher, which is also a podcast platform, because we out here, and that's how we do it. So today, have a good show for you today. Have a young lady who has been making real false moves on her own, putting it in the media game, in the publication game. She is the founder and editor-in-chief of Swag Herd Magazine. So I suggest you get your pen and your pad out and get ready to learn some new things and to learn how to, you know, just improve yourself, because I'm guaranteeing you this is going to be a great one. So we have Ms. Francesca Fancy Fielder, who I said is the editor-in-chief and the founder of Swag Herd Magazine. So, Fancy, how are you doing today? Thank you, and thank you for being on the Freedom Train. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and thank you all for having me.
No problem. It's always exciting to have new people on the Freedom Train, and just like everybody else, we want to make sure you feel at home. So this is a relaxed atmosphere, so you know you're at home, and we're going to have a good conversation with you about what you do, because I appreciate what you bring to the table, and I think people like you really need to be supported. So I want to make sure I extend my platform out and we give some light and some attention to you. So all of our listeners, all of our supporters, you're in for a treat today. So let's go ahead and get to this interview. So as always, we like to start off with our audience knowing a little more background information about you. So if you don't mind, could you tell us a little more about yourself? Why did you choose media and communications as your medium and your resource to become a beacon within the black community?
Okay, well, for starters, I'm originally from Macomb, Mississippi. I am a mother of three. I was a teen mom, and I attended Southern University. And, well, for the most part, and I'm a Libra, and I think all of those are, like, really deep elements, big elements for me, so I have to, you know, bring attention to that. And when I first started the magazine, like, when I started Swagger Magazine, I was actually an exotic dancer. And okay. I was trying to, like, come up with an idea for another business because I was interested in club promotions. Like, I love leading people, planning events, and just, you know, just, like, for me, everything is always kind of about a vibe. And so I ended up being introduced to a group of women that were all entrepreneurs. And for me, coming from a small town, and that was in Baton Rouge, but coming from a small town, that was just like, you know, I was in shock because I had never really met any other black women business owners. And so I wanted to find something else, and I would listen to, like, them. And, you know, I was really lost, but I would listen to the stories, and they would just tell me, you know, like, in school, we're taught that if you work hard, then you'll achieve whatever it is.
Yes,
but
yeah.
life was, like, teaching me, like, hey, that's not really how it goes. And so I was so inspired by their stories. I thought that other young women needed to hear, you know, like, hey, it's not always this cakewalk, you know.
Right.
And so I started writing from there.
Oh, that's great. But, see, what you just said I think is important, and, like, the way you verbalize it, because I say it as – when I'm talking to, like, teens and the youth, that, you know, sometimes life can kick you in your face and you're going to get the reality of it. And, you know, we get mad when we're adults because we realize, okay, our parents didn't tell us the whole truth about life. They were, you know, they were trying to protect us. But like you said, it's not easy. It's not easy. It's hard to be somebody, so you got to be willing to put that work in. And obviously you were willing to put that work in because, you know, you were where you are, so. Hats off to you for that.
Thank you.
So out of your experiences, you are a part of women's empowerment, or women's empowerment is something that's important to you. So what led you to becoming the person that's an advocate for women's empowerment?
Initially, it was just kind of those stories because, like I said, I really felt like people were kind of skipping over chapters, I guess you say, and then just showing the beautiful fairy tale ending, you know. And I realized that there was a lot more to it, and I thought that more people needed to know, especially and particularly women. But now I also see that it's men as well. But just trying to, like, portray that, not portray it, but communicate that, but also seeing how the media was, like, so influential. I didn't realize that as much until I began to, like, really begin to think of things. Even when, like I said, I started out as an exotic dancer, and I remember, like, T-Pain talking about being in love with a stripper, and that was really how I got into dancing, and I started realizing just all the messages that, you know, that we absorb and don't really realize unintentionally.
Right.
And so I wanted to put more positive messages out there for black women and just, you know, for us to realize, like, hey, we're not what the media portrays us to be. We're much more than that. And especially as women, because, I mean, we're mothers, you know, like, we birth everything. So I think it's really important for women to know, I'm not going to say their role, but just to say that we're so much more powerful than we know.
Yeah, well, I think that's very, very, very important because the society that we live in doesn't really allow for us to really, especially as black people, to know how powerful we are, and especially black women to know how powerful we are because, you know, young black teenagers know now that if you type black something into Google, most of the images that you're going to get are negative. And so those are some of the things that our youth carry into adulthood. But I do want to ask this on top of that because, and kind of going back a little bit where you're talking about you got around this group of women, because I think that's one of the most important pieces to being successful is meeting the right people who are willing to help you. So what was one of the greatest lessons you learned from that group of women that you still hold to this day that kind of helped you kind of get that extra boost to become who you are today?
Wow, I would have to say one of those women, well, she was like one of the founders of the group. Her name is Carlin LeBlanc. And right now she's like the owner of Lovely Menu, which is like a women's travel group. But Carlin, I always remember when I interviewed her, she was like, she's like one of those realest type of people. So in the middle of the interview, I remember her telling me, you know, like, you have to stop putting people on a pedestal. People are just people. And for me, again, it's a country girl. Like, it took me years to really understand it, but I never forgot it. It always stayed with me. And I had to realize, like, because especially working in media, you can meet people and think, oh, you know, they got this, this, and that. And, when, you know, you're wondering, when are you ever going to have that same type of success? Or, you know, you're just putting down on yourself and building these other people up. And I had to really, like, begin to see people for who they really are. So, and also that helped me to appreciate myself more, find more value in myself, not to cut anybody down, but just realize, like, hey, we're all just trying to figure this out.
No, that's real, because another thing you were saying, like me, I'm the same. I'm from Tallahassee, Florida. It's not a big city. It's a country city. It's the capital city of Florida, but nobody really cares and can tell. So, you know, we at the max. Matter of fact, our city is so small, when the students leave, half our population leave. So, you know, it's one of those. So I understand what you're saying when you're talking about coming from a small town and not necessarily really understanding the mindsets and the things that people from other areas have who become successful, because they've been able to experience a little more than we have within our small environment. So when you're able to come across that information, you're proud of yourself, especially when you apply it and you can see the growth in yourself. So I definitely understand that. So, all right, so those experiences led you to creating your publishing company called Fancy Thoughts LLC, or Fancy Thoughts LLC. And your publishing company actually publishes your magazine, which is Swag Her Magazine. So when did you start your publishing company, and what actually inspired you to start your company? And the other part of that is, what other type of content do you publish besides Swag Her Magazine?
Okay. So the magazine originally was founded in 2010, and it was under another name. I mean, it was still Swagger Magazine, but initially, like, the publishing company was Redbone Enterprises, LLC. Don't judge me, but that was the mindset I was in back then. So I ended up changing the name, like, you know, like a few years later, and there's still kind of some things going on with the name. But as far as for Swagger itself, Swagger kind of came about, this was during the swag surfing time, and I just love, like, I always remember seeing on one of the BET award shows or something, when everybody came down the aisle, like, they were performing it, but just that vibe that I got off of that, I never forgot that. And so of course, everybody was saying the word swag, but then when I initially did our first cover, the graphic designer, we had Swagger, like, at the end, G-E-R, and when he looked at it, he was like, this is too masculine for a female magazine, you know. He was like, we should change it to a H, so we became Swag Her. And as far as for the different content, now, the magazine is published online. Well, we have our website, which features, like, the smaller stories and more, like, news and inspiration, health, we do some entertainment, but I try to keep everything positive. Like, I feel like there's enough media that will drag us down as a society, so I try to make certain that all the content is uplifting or either educational. Now, we have begun to do a little more with politics, because it is becoming, you know, like, people need to know what's going on. So we're also promoting more content along the lines of that. And then we also just recently introduced our travel books, which are actually, they're smaller in size as well as content than the actual issue itself. And so the issue is printed bi-monthly, and then the travel books kind of fall in between. And in some ways, it's kind of like a vehicle for us as a small independent publishing company to, you know, be able to sustain throughout that time. But these issues are actually free. So it's more so ads, but then we'll recycle some of that content that maybe we had in the issue that we thought was just really good. And we'll, you know, maybe place a story or something in there. But then you also can get those travel books tailored. So say, like, there's someone in Houston that's trying to build their brand, and they want to be on the cover of a magazine. So you could buy that issue, and we'd also have some other advertisers in there as well, but you'd be on the cover.
Right.
And then I'm also, the last thing is that, of course, I'm trying to get my book finished. I guess we'll talk about that later, but that's something else that I'll be publishing under the company.
Okay. Okay, so I want to ask this real quick, because my co-host came on the line, so he's going to jump in real quick, but I do want to ask this. What are some of the advantages of having your own publishing company as far as being able to get your content out and being able to control the content? What have you experienced that are some of the advantages to you?
Well, for me, that's the main reason why I say independent, because I want to be able to speak, you know, what I see as our truth, as opposed to, you know, just going along with what the bigger media companies are pushing or whatever it is they're trying to sell. Because I just feel like we talk about being woke, but there's still so many more levels that we, you know, have yet to reach. And so I try to make certain that I have creative control so that I can discuss these things that are often swept under the table. That's been my biggest thing personally. I don't know. I really can't think of much else, because, you know, as an independent publisher, then you still have to try to make all the funds, and, you know, you're trying to produce an issue, write an issue, and everything at the same time. But that creative control, to me, that's everything.
Yes. I mean, it is to me, because it's like, first of all, nobody going to Suge Knight me. You know, none of that stuff there. Nobody going to be trying to Birdman me. None of the others. No. But it's being able to control our own voice, be able to control our own thoughts, and be able to control our own narratives. Because I was just I was actually having a conversation yesterday with my good friend, Professor Carl Tone Jones, and we were talking about how throughout the media, like mainstream media, how many of the black voices or black faces, whether they were for our community or not, nevertheless, these black faces are being taken away from these platforms. And, you know, we were talking about going back to Melissa Harris Perry to even now with the closing down of TV One with Roland Martin, not necessarily closing down, but taking the TV show off, Tavis Smiley, just a lot of our faces are being taken out. So the ones that we do control, people who listen and support these outlets, support, so we can control our own voices, control our own narratives. So
have to say, I remember after the whole Jemele incident, Jemele Hill, is that her name?
Yeah.
And I remember seeing someone on Facebook being like, you know, they were like, they not mad or you know, or disappointed, because we should have our own Fox News network. And I was like, you know what, that makes such sense. At first I was kind of like, nah, why would you say that? You know, you should be mad. But I thought that was such a great point. You know, we should have our own mediums, whereas we can speak freely about these things without worrying about an advertiser.
Right. I mean, that's so powerful and it's so true, because I do, like, I'm not mad at Jemele Hill for what she did. I'm not mad at her, but like she was almost like forced to kick the hornet's nest to be able to get a point out, and she had to kick the hornet's nest. And if we had our own outlets, she would have been free to say what she wanted to say. And I'm just big on us being able to create our own, and not just being able to create it, but once it's created, support it and support it thoroughly so it can grow and thrive, just like these white media companies. So.
Right.
Yes. All right. Patrick. We know you won't. Don't be hiding, Pat.
I'm shining because I'm late.
Hey, man, it's all good. It's all good.
Greetings, Patrick.
Hello. I apologize. I am a resident vampire.
Yeah.
And it took a monumentous effort for me to get up at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I still failed.
Hey.
It's okay.
Well, guess what? We get to throw you right in the fire.
I blame Joe. This is 100% Joe's fault. I take no responsibility for my actions.
Hey, man, we know you one of them type of dudes. It's all good.
But I do like what I've been hearing in terms of the Swag Her magazine. I read the profile. I'm not trying to go too far back, because I know you guys have already covered a lot, but what you guys were just speaking on, that was some powerful stuff about, you know, what you were saying about maintaining control. You know, that's something we're real big on. I'm huge on, even to the Jemele Hill situation and the black voices. That's funny. I was actually talking to PC last night. It was like 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning or something like that, because that's how that gets down. You want to talk to me, it need to be early in the a.m. or late in the p.m., you feel me? Anyways, But yeah, he was talking about that we were talking about something similar with the black voices and whatnot, and how, you know, it's imperative that we have our own mediums and spaces for black voices to be heard. But for some reason, that doesn't seem to be appreciated the way it should be within the community. Hey, you own a publishing company. Why do you think that is?
For me, and this might, some people might not take this the best way, but I kind of feel like a lot of the times, you know, we as a black community tend to think that if it's not from the community of others, if it's not built by others, then it's not good enough. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, they there and they are all right, but, you know, I want to go deal with People Magazine or so-and-so, you know, whoever else, just because we're, I guess, they find us more relatable, so that's almost equivalent to not being enough or, you know, aspiring high enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, because and my frustration sometimes in my rants when I'm talking to Pat and we ranting, like I often say, and what we often see is that a lot of times our people aren't appreciated until they're validated by other people. Like I was,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was looking at some of these new black mayors and some of these other people and all these mediums and things that we have. And I meet a lot of great people who do a lot of great things, but they just don't have a lot of shine or attention. And I think we need to support people from the beginning. We don't need to wait till they become famous or validated by others, because those people probably have become bitter by then, because they're like, my own community don't support me until I become popular. So my thing is, when if you meet somebody or you come across something and you think it's great, don't just tell the person that it's great, support it.
Yeah, you just said a mouthful there.
Yeah, you did. I mean, both you guys did, though. I mean, because it's true that we need to be validated, and it's, you know, like, I think we have, as a community, we suffer from, I'm still debating whether it's a fear of failure or a fear of success or some odd combination of both, but for some reason, we definitely don't support each other until we become these major entities that are, you know, like, by the time I'm doing $100 million in business, it's hard to contact me. Like, it's hard for you to reach out to me in the way that you would have been able to reach out to me. It's harder for you to have the effect that you would have been able to have had you reached out to me when I was only doing $10 in business, or whatever the case might be. But for some reason, we don't want to be associated with small entities, especially small black entities on the startup level. We want, you know, and maybe that's the microwave mentality too, where people just, they want instant success, instant fame, and easiest way to get that is to attach to something that's already at that level. I don't know. That's my question.
I have to say, though, I think that that's a great point as well. And that instant success, to me, I kind of also think that kind of goes along with, if people can, okay, like my Facebook following, if they see me going through things, then it's like, oh, well, you know what I mean? Like, it's not the same as the people that are still going through things, but in those higher offices. But to them, it's like, oh, those people don't go through anything, but I see her struggling with this, this, and that. So that means, you know, I'm going to skip her and then move on to these people because they got all their stuff together. Everybody has, you know, everybody has their own little trials and tribulations, but to them, it's not being able to see that. I think that kind of makes them more trusting, or that brand may seem more credible because of it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
No, that's definitely
that mystique does play a part.
Yeah, image and all of that, because, like you said, people have their role models and the things they look up to, and, you know, typically if you seem human or you seem like you're like them, then that kind of normalizes you and that kind of lessens the brightness of your brand in a lot of people's eyes compared
right.
to a larger brand. That's deep. You know what? We might need to have a show on that, Joe.
I know, right? So you always come write that down. So speaking of brands, I do want to go more into your brand. So many people aspire to be many things, right? But starting a magazine. Now, I haven't met many. I've only met one person outside of yourself who has actually started, who had the idea of starting a magazine and went through with the idea and everything. And so, why did you decide to start your own magazine? And, well, you already told us why you named it Swagger, but what made you want to have your own magazine?
I would have to say, like, I've always been a writer. I remember writing my first story in the first grade. So initially I thought I'd be an author, and I loved reading. So it was like, for me, again, coming from a small town, that's how I was able to learn more about the world through reading. And so basically I just, you know, kind of just, I'm not going to say I just kind of fell into it, but when I first started Swagger, I will say initially I was recording my interviews because I was too nervous to write them. I didn't know how people would be about my writing. You know, I was scared of them criticizing and so on. And I actually showed it to someone on Twitter that I admired, and she was like, you know, it's good, but you ain't write anything. And I was like, oh, you know, well, I didn't think about it that way because I just had like a lot of video formats or whatever for people to check out. And then I started writing. But, I'm trying to remember the rest of your question because it was something else I wanted to tell you about that.
Why did you start it?
But the thing is, because I love writing, but also just love, I don't like being just in, I don't like doing just one thing. I really am a creative. I kind of consider myself to be 50% artist and being 50% business person. So, like, with the magazine, Essence was a big inspiration because not only is it a magazine, but then they have Essence Fest. You know, then they have other branches of it. And I thought a magazine would allow me to also be able to have those other branches. You know, if I just wrote books, it wouldn't be the same as also wanting to put on an award show. But with the magazine, you can do all of that. So it just really allowed me a lot of flexibility.
That's good. That's good. So like, it's like the vision and all the passion that comes up when you talk about your magazine. That's great. Because you know how you meet people who tell you about something that they have and there's no confidence behind what they're saying. I want to do this. And I've always wanted to do this, and they're just still in the stage of, I just want to, and I just want to. So when you meet people who have done it, but still, not only have you done it, but you still have grander visions for your brand. I mean, that's refreshing. Like you say, I'm still in my small town, but luckily I've been able to find and network with different people who dream big, like myself, and have done big. But it's like, you know, that small town thing, so I'm always doing my best to attach myself to people who think big, so. And that right
there. Yeah, that's important.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It sounded to me like you just said you wanted to leech off her.
Here you go.
I mean,
I didn't take it that way.
Pat, you know, Pat got a metal plate.
That's what I heard, though.
Okay. All right.
Hey,
okay. Huh?
Don't shoot the messenger, man.
All right. Or the sheriff.
You can shoot the deputy, though.
Go ahead, man. Talk.
I am talking. See, Joe, look, we're not going to do this while we got a guest on the line. We're not, Joe. I just woke up. We having a good interview. She hitting people with this wonderful, wonderful personality, all this passion and excitement. And you trying to beef with me in the middle of all of that.
Man.
Exactly. So,
whatever.
moving forward. why did you target your magazine? Your magazine is targeted to the black community, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So why did you feel that was necessary for there to be, like you mentioned, Essence being one of your, something that was a huge kind of inspiration or something that you drew on, why did you feel like there was a need for another black magazine in that space?
Oh, okay. Well, of course, I mean, like I said, I wanted to be able to promote more positive images of black women and men, but also just the neat thing I think about Swagger is it's wrote by, well, most of our content comes from either people that are trying to inspire change or, you know, inspire others, or just people who want to uplift as opposed to just share gossip. So I feel like there was a bit, and there still is a space for that. I mean, of course, there's been a lot of other media outlets to come up after us, but I just feel like at that time I wasn't really seeing that. Now, I mean, of course, there was still essence there, but another neat thing I think about the magazine is, for me, because I do write a lot of the content, it's written by a woman that's still growing and learning about life. Like, I don't try to profess to know everything, you know. I'm still discovering myself, as well as, you know, most of the writers are like, they've had a renewed or they've grown in their mindset. So it's more like a lot of free spirits, a lot of good spirits there that I think allow us to still have this space and, you know, and kind of make it different.
I feel that.
Mm-hmm. From a more a standpoint of the everyday black person, rather than people who, like we were talking about earlier, people who we would often look to or put on a pedestal, or think that people may not experience what we go through on a everyday basis. But when you read Swag Her, you will be able to get the best of both worlds, because you got great writers, but these are also people who go through the everyday things like you, so you get to experience that as well.
And also, let me add on.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, also, there's the fact that a lot of the times, you know, with especially with the major outlets, they only want to have the celebs, or, you know, and we don't do that. I try to make certain that there's a good blend between the two. Sometimes people don't like that, you know, because not all of our features are invited features, and some of those are paid features, but they give, like, other people, you know, aspiring individuals, the opportunities to get their brand or their message out there as well. And I think that that's really important also, because for one, those people that they do pay for the features, then that helps us to continue to be able to produce the other content that we're writing and not being paid for. You know, it's kind of like they're paying for that, but it's still all a gift for everyone, you know?
Right.
No, I like that. I like it. I mean, everybody basically, anybody has a chance, if they're doing something, to be in the magazine. That's pretty cool.
Something positive. I just got to correct you there, because some stuff I'm not going to, you know, I'll be like, nah, uh-uh. But, I mean, but, yeah, I do. I'm not going to, like, a lot of times we don't feature a lot of artists because of the content of their music. Now, I listen to all type of artists, but at the same time, I'm not going to promote some artist that's only trying to tear down women, you know, or only talk
right.
about us killing each other. I'm not going to do that.
Right, right.
It's all about trash out there, too. Trash.
Right.
I said it. Your mixtape is trash. Stop giving it to me in the stores. You can't rap. The beats suck. Whoever mixed it is trash. I'm sorry. That's next.
It's you angry. You angry.
No, because every time I go to the corner store, somebody handed me a mixtape, and at this point, I could tell it's trash by the way you hand it to me.
Well, you got to think outside that box, my brother. But fancy, let me ask you, have you, because as you were saying that about artists and things and people who talk about good things and empowerment, have you ever heard of the rapper Rapsody?
No, I haven't.
Okay. When you get a chance, go to YouTube and check out Rapsody, because I think, like, she's one of the newer rappers. I'm not sure exactly how long she's been out, but I've been listening to her. I've listened to her album. She's very, very dope. As far as female MCs, when they talk about the new ones, her name comes up. Of course, you know, Cardi B is popular, but she's a MC. So check her out, because she might, you know, she might be something good for you. So.
Rapsody been around.
Okay, I'm taking a note.
Okay. Well, she new to me, so, but I think she's dope, so. And I judge hard. I judge MCs hard. So I think she's dope. So
she's been around. I know it's been at least 5 years. I know it's been at least.
See, Technical Ted. I mean, let me.
No,
okay.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that.
No, I'm just
messing. You didn't know, so I'm just like I'm familiar with Rapsody. That's all.
So.
Well, I'm gonna check her out.
Cool. So, like I said, your magazine is an empowerment and lifestyle publication, and you said for the new black community. So, can you explain that to us? And I just want to make sure we understood.
That was going to be my follow-up.
Yes, the new black community. What do you consider the new black community?
I think it's for those black individuals with a new mindset, like as opposed to their oppressed mindset. Okay. For those people that are really, you know, that can see through all the, I guess you say, all the BS that's out there right now. For those people that are, you know, that's looking for the real truth and, you know, that just aren't just going along with things.
Okay, the thinkers. People who use
right.
critical thinking. Okay. I think that's important because when people read that, and I'm glad you laid that out like that because, you know, sometimes when people read stuff, they go crazy. But when people read that and they have that explanation, they can see that we're talking about black people who are progressive black people, not just the black people who – and I make this distinguish. Make this be able to distinguish between the two. Not just the people who are supposed woke, but the people who are actually, through their actions and everything that they're doing, are actually making differences and actually can really see that they're thinking outside the box and can see the real critical thinking, not just the people who just talking about it, who just look like it or just smell like shea butter or something like that. So.
Right.
All right.
I hate that word, woke.
Yeah, I know, me too, but hey, you know, but anywho, all right, talk, Pat.
Ask my question, Joe, man, you ask my question.
Well, ask this next one then, shoot,
no.
Don't be mad.
Oh, no, you know, it's a flow, Joe, it's a flow. Flo, I was just watching Flojo run.
Man, ask the question for us. I'm just playing.
Because Flojo was that chick. Hey, so anyways, Joe, stop getting me off track. So, I had a question.
You do?
What, like, so you mentioned earlier about wanting to, it might have been Joe, he's been talking a lot. You mentioned earlier about wanting to keep the perspective of your magazine in like kind of in the realm of regular people where it's not a high and mighty or like a super successful or whatever type of view. You did say something like that, right? I'm not tripping.
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
Okay. So when Swag Curve surpasses the success of Essence, how or Jet or any of those, Ebony or whatever, how do you plan on keeping that perspective in the magazine?
Ooh, that's a hard question, Pat.
Yeah, I got a good one. 2 points for me.
Well, for one, I always try to be real about stuff. And so I think that as long as you're being real and you're being, I'm not going to say current, but, you know, like, it's like I said before, I'm still learning and growing. And I think that influences a lot of the whole spirit of the magazine itself. So I think as long as I'm still learning and growing, I mean, of course, even still now, I'm 33. I started this magazine when I was, 25? So, of course, my mindset has grown and changed over the years. And so with that, my writing and the content that I look for has also changed over the years. And I've had to let go of a lot of limitations and just, like, realize, like, hey, you know, even though we were brought up to believe it's this, and this, it's really this, and that. And so I think that kind of plays a part into how we'll be able to grow in the future as well. Like, just, I'm not gonna, I guess you kind of say keeping up with the times for the most part. And then, of course, there's always more innovation, and media itself is just steadily growing, especially right now. So there's even times now where I have to sit back and learn about new things and just, you know, learn what else everybody else is looking at, because I can get to be really into myself at times as an artist and not really pay attention to what else is going on around me. But when I stop and really be present, then I'm like, okay, hey, we should be discussing this. And this right here isn't being addressed, but it's been going on for years, you know, things like that.
Okay. I can do it. Cool. Yeah, Pat, in your face.
I know, yeah. She spiked that one right back on my head.
Vince Carter slam dunk. All
right. Not Vince Carter, though, because he got injuries. His career ain't paying out. You don't
the young Vince. The young Vince. In the Olympics, okay?
No, you give her somebody that had a long, successful career.
Kobe.
There you go.
All right.
Well, no, Kobe was selfish, though. Don't
Kobe.
Put that on her.
Hey, man. Mamba mentality. There you go. Got you. Don't be asking no questions like that, man. She's going to come back. She got you, all right? I'm just playing. So, you also own a public relations media and branded boutique called She So Media. So could you give us a little more information about She So Media and, you know, how does that business help your other businesses and how do you find the time to do all the things that you do?
Well, She So Media is still more so a lot of writing, but it's just more writing about individuals, like, of course, I offer PR branding and some marketing consulting with that. And so a lot of the times, especially because we deal with so many small business owners and they're still trying to grow or develop their brands, and so I assist with, like, brand identity, but also just again, I think I'm a creative vessel. I don't know, that could just be me, but I oftentimes, the business owners, you know, people might have a business, but they don't really know how to market it or brand it or try to take it any further. They're just operating their business. You know, it's all about, hey, I need to make a sale, and they aren't really trying to tell their brand story or anything like that. And so with the boutique, then I also offer, like, press release writing, bios, helping you obtain like, and secure press interviews, things that will continue, you know, to just help develop the brand itself. So, yeah, that's basically it. I mean, it does get to be kind of tiresome at times, because sometimes when I do have clients, then it's like I'll begin to focus so much on them that I'm not looking at what I need to be doing to, you know, continue to push my own brand in that sense. I'm writing press releases for everyone else, and I'm not writing any for us when I should have those going out. So it can get to be kind of an imbalance, and I've still been trying to find the balance. But also, one thing I realized is, as I talked about before, how the media world is growing. There are so many people out there that consider themselves to be publicists, and I know this because I receive those pitches when, you know, they're trying to pitch a client to be featured in the magazine, and I'm just like, oh, my God, like, how are people paying you for these services? And it's just basically like, you know, you threw me a Facebook post or something like, hey, check out my client. But people do that. And so I realized, though, with that type of work, it can get to be difficult because people don't always want to pay you what they're worth. And then there's people out there that that are setting that standard, you know, because the quality of their work is basically crap, in my opinion. But so I struggle with trying to make certain that, hey, if I'm going to do this, then I'm going to make certain that I'm being compensated for it, because it does take a lot of work. People don't realize, like, I might have to pitch 100 people just for you to only get 3 features, but you're just looking at, oh, I only got 3, but you don't know how many emails and phone calls I've had to do, you know, to get you those 3.
Right.
That is a great point that, you know, we talk about and we dance around it, but I don't think anybody's ever nailed it right on the head the way you just did. When we talk about looking at the process versus the actual result and how many people just look at the result and think that they can attain something similar or they can achieve something similar in a faster manner, but they have no idea the process that's involved with getting to that result. And that is just an excellent way that you just worded that, by saying, you know, that the end result is 3 clients. You might think that you could get, you know, 3 opportunities or whatever. You might think, well, I could have did that in 3 hours, but you don't know that, you know, I pitched 500 different entities to get those three, and that's what made it take so long was all of the no's. You know, we rarely have people come on and talk about wading through all the no's to get to the one or two yeses that they might get. And when they do talk about it, they seldom speak that directly to that point. That was extremely powerful.
Yeah, yes, I've been through it. And I also just want to add to that what you're saying about that process. I think a lot of the times, too, with people that work in the PR industry, then there's a lot of blind pitching, you know. And for me, I try to see, okay, like my client is interested in this, this, and this. You know, that might align with this brand or that brand, but that may not work with these other people, even though it is a black magazine, but they might only focus on so-and-so. You know, and a lot of times people just send me pictures that have absolutely nothing. You know, if you were to really, I always tell people, go check out the site first and see what it is that we're promoting and what our beliefs are before you try to pitch me on something that's totally unrelated, you know. I don't think people look at that aspect either, because that is also time consuming.
Now, that's key, though, because even on this show, we have a certain audience that we're reaching. We have a certain thing that we're creating with this show and a tone, and we want to interview certain people. And just because you may be doing something doesn't mean that right now you may be ready, or your platform may not line up with our platform. And it's just about making sure that you make the right moves and you put the right people on in this. And I think sometimes some people don't understand that, so they just want to throw things out different places because they're just trying to be on. And you have to make sure that you put your brand in the right place so you can actually grow from it and benefit, rather than just saying, hey, well, I did this, but what came from that? So I have to be thinking about all that. So I do want to ask this real quick, kind of go back with the magazine. Who were some of your most notable or your most memorable interviews that you've had or features that you've had in your magazine?
I would definitely have to say David Banner for one. Interviewing David was just so. And I worked so hard to get that interview. I hadn't ever had to, like, keep following up and, you know, sending emails and asking. But the knowledge that he dropped in that interview, like, and that was actually in our Uplift the Black Man issue that we did. Well, it came out late last year. Well, actually late 2016. But the thing was, it was just so many great men in that issue, and they shared, like, just so much knowledge that I think that people often overlook. I'm not going to say it's common sense, because a lot of people don't have common sense, but it was just, you know, if you weren't in that entrepreneurial spirit or let me go out and get it, I think, like, when you read that issue, for me, that was, like, mind-changing. Even writing it, like, I was just so amazed, but I was like, hey, this is all, a lot of this is already out there, but we're not following these rules or taking these steps. You know, we're talking about what we want, but we aren't really doing what we need to do to obtain these goals that we're talking about. So that interview alone, and then also, of course, we talked about current events and the whole the presidency, and just that was one other thing, like the disconnect between the black man and the black woman. We talked about relationships. And then also in that same issue, I talked with Jay Barnett. And one thing that King Jay, as he's called, one thing he mentioned was, like, everybody, I guess you say society, has put so much into uplifting the black woman and, you know, making certain that she has all these tools. And then we as black women find ourselves kind of at a point where we don't have anyone available to marry, because men aren't, you know, I'm not going to say they don't have as many resources, but they aren't getting that type of attention. And so I think that issue was, like, really slept on, but that's been, like, for me, that was kind of one of the biggest ones. Well, that definitely was the biggest. That was the biggest issue for me, but also just speaking with those guys and then just really being able to talk to men about things that women, you know, are interested in but hadn't I guess, really dared to ask before. But then another interview I did was with Dr. Algenia Warren Freeman, and she was like the president of several colleges. And just being a female president, for one, of course, was like really big. And we discussed leadership, and she was just telling me, you know, like when you're the first, you're going to have to, usually like when they bring in women presidents at an institution, it's like the institution is already almost like a foot in the grave, basically. And they're bringing these women in to save them. And she was just talking about, you know, how people don't understand it. They're just celebrating, oh, it's a woman now in this position and we've made these strides, but they don't know what all the woman is going to have to do now that she's in that position. So those two were like really impactful, I guess you'd say, to me.
Yeah, that's good. That's great. That's good stuff right there. Yep. Yeah, I've been, I think I'm on email number 5 or 6 with David Banner, so I thank you for saying that. So I'm just keep sending them.
Look, I was tagging him on Instagram and everything. Like, I did a little post, like, you know, I remember one of his songs was on, he said something like, you know, David Banner, we need you. I even had to do a little post with that and then just talk about it, you know, and he liked it, but it was still a little while to go. But once he liked it, it brought me a little bit closer to it.
That's cool. That's cool. So I got more hope now. So thank you for saying that. I got more hope.
David Banner.
Yeah.
I still think about Rubber Band Man when I hear David Banner.
That's a good song.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Joe.
Well, okay.
I'm enjoying y'all back and forth.
I know. Don't be talking junk later. Don't be talking junk later. But earlier, Fancy, you mentioned your book. So, Bag Lady Diaries is the name of the book, correct?
Mm-hmm. So, well, for now.
Okay, for now. Right, for now. Okay. Because you're still in, like, in the rough draft stages?
No, actually, okay, I wrote this book in, like, 2014. I had been writing it for years and just kind of losing my, you know, my writings and stuff, moving around. And then I wrote it in 2014, went through, like, depression or whatever, moved to Atlanta, and I just, like, abandoned the book. And then with me being back in Baton Rouge now, in 2017, I picked it back up again. It was just, like, someone just told me to pick it up one night. And when I first had wrote it, like, I had it edited, and the girl, I was so busy and just so confused at that point in my life. I read her notes where she told me, like, that I needed to add more emotion to it and some other things, but I just totally dismissed it, and I don't know. So when I picked it back up, I started back writing, and, of course, my story has grown all types of ways since then, but I'm hoping to have it finished, like, within the next month and then be ready, like, you know, going back through the editing phase again, but also realize that it's really important to find an editor that speaks like you and can relate to what it is that you're trying to say. I think there was, like, some disconnect there, because I was like, what you mean? Like, so,
Now, I experienced that with my book as far as the editor being able to speak like you and really understand, because my book's a history book, so with mine, it's more so making sure that the way I tell the story is still in there, and it's not the way that the editor is telling the story. But okay, so without giving away, you know, all of the details about the book, can you give us a synopsis of the book?
Okay. Well, basically, I know you all see that image that floats around social media at the beginning of the year, the woman carrying out a bag, and I know you all have already heard of Erykah Badu's Bag Lady. But I'm basically breaking down, like, all my bags. But it's a memoir, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I kind of compartmentalize everything into its own bag while I'm telling my story. And part of the thing that we were concerned about is that the timeline of things, and she was trying to tell me, like, oh, you know, you're kind of jumping around, but initially I was kind of worried about that and just trying to figure out how can I still tell the story and still be jumping around. But I'm like, hey, from the books I've been reading lately, especially like Gabrielle Union's We're Gonna Need More Wine, people jump around all the time. So that was like another disconnect with her. But I think now especially I wanted to get to an ending. I felt like I had to accomplish something more in my life before I could really write that ending. And initially I wanted this fairy tale ending, which is a big part of my, I guess you say, my whole plot, just trying to get that fairy tale ending. And I've had to grow and realize that, you know, it's not always like that.
Right. Okay.
You know, finding a, you know, I'm anxious to, I want, because when you say that, I'm always curious. People that skip around in books, that's always been an interesting phenomenon to me, because I've never really been able to figure it out. Even when, you know, I read other books and I see them do it, I'm like, how did they do that? Now, I'm not really a storyteller, but it's still an interesting phenomenon. So when you say that you're trying to add that into your book, you know, that makes me curious, because now even more I want to, you know, read it to see how you execute that. But also, you seem like you got a cool story. Why'd you, you might have already said that, and it's me being late. I was on CPT. What is the reason why, for you left Atlanta, for? If you don't mind saying.
Oh, my. Well, okay, and this, now this is a part of the book I had just really discussed, but I have kind of discussed it in some other interviews. But, okay, I left Atlanta initially thinking I was coming back to Atlanta. Like, I was dating this guy who basically turned out to be a scammer, and he suggested I go to California to take care of some business for him, and I did this, like, drove to California with this girl that I didn't even know for, like, a week, and I stayed in California for about a month. The guy had been borrowing money from me, and just, you know, I'm thinking I'm investing into these little businesses or whatever, and then we broke up, like, the second day. He never even came with me. He sent me first, and then he was supposed to be coming, like, the following week, and then we broke up the second day that I was there in California, and I was just kind of stranded and broke. So I had to come back home to Mississippi, and I've just been basically rebuilding since then. It, like, taught me a lot. But I'm not going to lie. Like, when I was in Atlanta, that's where my heart is. I always say I left my heart in Atlanta because that was just, like, a whole new world to me. But it was much, much faster than I ever anticipated. But I went there totally blind. Like, I was like I said, after I finished writing the book or getting to my stopping point in the book, and I was depressed, and I was supposed to have been graduating from school, and that did not turn out, and I found out, like, a week before graduation. So I was just like, okay, you know what? Atlanta came to me in a dream one night, and people have been suddenly talking to me about it, just, you know, through the magazine. I think that that maybe is why I had the dream. But so when it came to me in a dream, I was like, hey, you know what? Maybe I should try it. But I had never really been there other than, like, once on a layover and then once for a hair show. So I packed up all my stuff in my little Volkswagen and drove. I had never even driven that far. So it was just like I threw myself into a situation totally unprepared. And I remember one of my mentors being like, you got to have a plan. And I thought I had a plan, but I really didn't. So yeah, that's kind of how that went.
Okay.
That sounds like a dope movie.
I know, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why I gotta get to some time.
We need to get that book, turn that book into that movie, get that money off of both of them.
Yeah, that's the goal.
That's what I'm talking about.
Why is it so hard to find a good editor? Like, I got a great editor, but she don't like editing. So I gotta find somebody that like editing. That's a good editor. I ain't been able to find nobody that like editing, is a good editor, and speaks my writing language. Why is that so difficult?
Because we're from the South. I don't know. I just threw something out. I don't know.
You saying Southern people illiterate? What are you saying, John?
Nah, because people don't understand us. We're from the South, so.
I don't sound Southern,
yeah.
Though, do I?
Yeah.
I do? Not?
Yeah.
I do?
Yeah.
Yo, that's the greatest because when I was in school in Florida, my teachers would be like, you don't sound like you from here. So I just started telling them I was from North Dakota. And they believed me.
Yeah, you crazy.
Like all of them.
Yeah. You crazy. So, all right, so Fancy, we're going to do a little bragging. Do a little more bragging, right? So, in addition to all the major accomplishments that you have had so far, you know, you had your ups and downs, but you have really, really, really got yourself to a place to where you are doing your thing. So you're also, you will soon have your bachelor's degree in mass communications, and then you're starting a nonprofit organization for black women. So when you have a chance to really look back and reflect on your life and see how much progress that you've made, how proud are you of yourself? And from just your personal trials and tribulations, your ups and downs, what is the greatest lesson that you've learned so far that has helped you move forward and be as successful as you are, and even being helps you be more successful moving into the future?
I would have to say I'm very proud, because when I look back at my 25-year-old self, my 23-year-old self, you know, I really was, I thought that I knew everything. I don't know why, but I did. But I also look at just my upbringing. I come from a mother who was, like, a big enabler. And so for me, like, everything kind of was like, okay, she took care of everything at home. I didn't really have any chores or anything like that. I never really had any responsibilities, even though I was a teen mom. And then at the same time, I have the educational system that, you know, was just, you know, basically forcing this whole, if you work hard, you can obtain whatever it is you're trying to work on. And I had to, like, of course, like I said, I've had to realize that it was more than that, but I also had to do, like, a lot of mental work. I had to do a lot of growing. Like, I just read an article the other day where they was talking about, like, the things you need to know before 30. And I'm 33, and in that article, like, one of the things that stood out to me was, like, no one will, like, no one's going to help you, or no one's coming to save you. And for the longest, I kept thinking, oh, you know, I'll have this, either this get-rich-quick method or idea, or somebody's going to come and save me. And I really, like, I have been through the trenches so many times. I mean, I've been homeless and everything, but I had to learn, like, to hold my faith, and also just the obstacles are going to come. So just, like, brace myself and prepare for the next thing. Like, don't let things pull me out of character. Don't just, I suffer with depression a lot, and I had to realize, like, a big part of when we do suffer from depression, or anyone that has experienced it, then we get so caught up in that moment. And me, when I say I get caught up in the moment, I just shut down. Like, I don't do anything. I'm not moving. I'm not leaving my room. I don't want to talk to anybody. Everything falls to the wayside. And I had to learn how to come out of it. Like, no, I don't feel good. No, I don't want to bother with people. But at the end of the day, I know I got something right. I know I got something to publish. You know I got to get stuff done. And I had to really learn that.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Definitely feel you on that. I'm 33 myself. So, and yeah, exactly. You speak in the gospel when you say, a lot of people talk about things that you're supposed to learn before a specific age, but it's not that. That's ideal. That's the ideal world. The real world is, depending on your environment, that's how you're going to get a lot of the information that people say that you're supposed to have to be successful. And then you also learn on your journey that you define what success is for yourself. And
yes,
I know for me, one of the biggest things is stop looking at other people who are successful, or people who are doing that thing, and comparing yourself, because, you know, you get frustrated sometimes understanding how much work that you put into what you're doing, and the sacrifices that you make, the sleep that you lose, the money that you spend, all the fun that you've passed up, just everything that you missed out on when you're pursuing your goal, and not to get frustrated, not to get angry, not to get to a point where you just want to give up on yourself, but to really put things in a perspective for yourself. And like you said, nobody's going to come to save you. Nobody's here to save you. Nobody owes you anything. So you have to make it happen for yourself. You have to be in it for the long haul to make it happen.
And can I just add this too, though, Joseph? Because, I mean, like, I totally agree with all of that. And one other thing, though, I had to realize, too, with just me having kids, and I think this is something that we don't discuss as much, but, well, you know, just like talking, I guess, talking-wise. I don't hear people discuss it as much. But I was so, like, ambitious that I was never really present. you know, even though I had my kids with me and we lived together, but I was like, I was always working another job, if not working two jobs. Half of the time I was in school. I've been in school for like almost 10 years now. And it's just like, I was never taking the time to be present and just like really appreciate the small things in my kids. And that's one thing that I've really like had to work on, because for me, being a single mother, that was like a task. You know, and I had to, like, really realize all the joy and the beauty that the kids really bring into our lives and how important it is to be there for them, because I was so focused on what I wanted. So that was another lesson, especially with my son making 18 last year. When last year came around and I really looked at it, I was just like, oh, my God, you know, like, I've missed so many opportunities, because my whole thing was, as a parent, you want to be able to provide for your kids. You want to give them everything that they ask for, da da da. And then I was like, hey, you know what? At the same time, you also want to make certain that you're putting decent people out in the world, because I think it's just like, you know, like, yeah, something's wrong with people nowadays. And I had to really, like, when I realized that, and then I began to reevaluate things, you know, like, I don't want my kids growing up to be as unprepared for the world as I was, you know? So that was another lesson.
That's something that even, like, I had to learn as well. I went through my stint as a single parent, and, you know, now I'm married. So, but with the kids, you know, that's something I had to learn as well, was that, you know, your job, like, that word provide means so much more than just food, clothes, and lights. You know what I'm saying? Like, that means providing emotional support, providing presence, providing security, you know, being there for them. And in that providing, also being able to allow them to provide you with things. They can provide you with moments of joy, moments of happiness, of course, moments of anger and rage. But they can provide you with a whole lot of things. So the whole, you know, that's a powerful point as well, when we get around to accepting that this parenting dynamic is a give take situation, where even to that, like, you know, you used to hear people say, well, when you have kids, you have to stop doing this and give up that, and some of those things are true. But what I found was that my kids became a powerful motivator for me to go after things, not for me to say, well, I can't go to school because I got kids and I ain't got time. No, my kids, if I want to be able to look my kids in the face and say, you should get a degree, if that's what I choose to tell them, then it would be more powerful if I have a degree. So all of a sudden that becomes a motivator for me to go do things. You should start your own business. Well, I got my own business. You should do this. Well, I did that. You know what I'm saying? So that really is a powerful lesson. And I think in the process of doing that, you do produce better human beings, because I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, the version of human that's been coming out.
Yeah. Messed up.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be happy
Rico.
When I pass on. I think I'm going to just be happy to not have to deal with these people no more. I'm sorry. That was nasty.
Hey, yeah, it's my need to hit that reset button on some people. I agree myself. So I was reading through your bio the other day, and I came across something that I was interested in when you were talking about your ingredients to success. So I was curious about your specific ingredients. So could you tell us about, just for you specifically, not necessarily in general ingredients, but for you specifically, what were some of the ingredients that led to your success?
I would definitely have to say perseverance. Like, I mean, you can't just try something one time and then when you get told no, just give up. So I really had to work on it. Changing my mindset, I think mindset is everything. Like, as long as I'm thinking positive and just, you know, telling myself I can do things, then I can do things. But when I start allowing fear and doubt to creep in, and then, like, I'm that person that will really go down the rabbit hole, you know, just like, oh, this went wrong, now that's going to go wrong. And I had to learn, like, and I'm still working on that. That's still, like, a work in progress, but I realize that is such a big thing. of course, goal setting and writing stuff down. Like, initially I would think that taking notes on my phone was helpful, and it still is to be able to look at. But when I write things down, because I'm a visual person, I often look at things, like, I often look at the end result. I'm not going to lie. I'm one of those type of people that will often look at the end result and then don't know how to go, like, work my way backwards and make a plan. Like I said, when I went to Atlanta, I didn't have a plan, so I had to, like, really start planning things out. I'm sorry about the beep. Okay, the other thing I would have to say is just being my authentic self, because I know but I had to learn myself in order to be my authentic self. You know, like, you can get around other people and want to kind of change up because it seems like you're not fitting in, or, you know, you don't have what all they have, or, you know, those insecurities might pop up. And I had to realize, like, hey, stand firm in it. Like, I'm flawed as I don't know what. But, and even with my background as, you know, being a dancer, initially I would be so intimidated by people, especially, like, those women I would meet. And then I had to realize, like, hey, you know, like, I'm sitting here worrying about y'all, but y'all asking me to teach you how to do this, this, and that. You know what I mean? So I was like, okay, it's not, you know, just what all I thought it was. But I had to learn to, like use my own voice and just really express my mind with people, because I can be one of those type of people, especially as a Libra. I'm like, I can be real chill. You know, like, I'm not going to – I don't try to make waves. But I had to realize, like, sometimes you got to make waves, you know. Sometimes you have to go ahead on and say what needs to be said, because other people will continue to try to use you or misuse you, you know. So I had to really say that those things have been, like, I guess my biggest keys for success. I would have to say those things. I was trying to think if it was anything, but that seems to be it.
Nah, that's cool. That's cool. But and the reason why I asked for yours specifically, because I think too often we try to model ourselves after other people, and it's okay having role models, but one thing people don't do is be able to take the aspects what they like and then mold it for themselves and personally what works for you, because what worked for the next person may not work for you specifically. Some of those aspects may help you, but the totality of it may not be specifically for you. So have it focused more so on you, and those are great ingredients for success for you specifically. Okay, so that's cool. So We've reached the final question of the final official question of this interview, and this is Patrick's question. And so
I don't deserve it today, yo. I was like, you take it.
Pat, we finna do this. I'm midway. We finna do this.
Okay? You got to I gotta punish myself for being late. Otherwise, it becomes a habit.
Well, nah, it ain't gonna be coming up. You know what, Pat? You done messed up my flow. Okay, you know what? Don't even worry.
I'll bring you in. How about that? I'll bring you in. All right. But you still gotta tell the fat man to do the drum roll. So I'm gonna bring you in. All right. And 3, 2, 1. All right. So this is actually Joe's favorite question. You was early.
Yes. So if you were the all-powerful ruler of Black America, what would you change, and what would your message to the people be?
Okay. First of all, I like reparations for our ancestors, but I would also like reparations for going to school for 12 years, and then also for the you know, going to college and furthering my education, because, and I say that, I guess this will be for all Black people, because I just don't feel like we were educated in the things that we needed to be educated in. So I think for me personally, like, I mean, I talk about school, I'm still trying to get done with school, but a big part of me kind of feels like that was a waste of time. Like, and there was a lot of other things I needed to be learning about life. So those are some of the changes that I would make. I would also really work hard to reconnect the Black man and woman, because something is really wrong here, and I don't know what it is. Like, I mean, even though I discussed it with David, and one thing I will say, one thing I discussed with David, well, his suggestion, he was like, I don't know what the disconnect is between the black man and the black woman, but it seems like the black woman is so driven by whatever it is the white man has, like, you know, this idea that he sold her, that we're just, you know, running towards that. And I understand that, and I agree with him in some ways. And then at the same time, I'm like, okay, but what about the black man? Because it seems like he just seems to have no knowledge of himself. They like, really slipping and slacking or something, you know. And I just think that it's just now as I really work closely with my kids and just really realize, like, I grew up without a dad. And it wasn't even really a reason for that. But initially I thought, oh, I don't need a daddy. You know, I don't need a man in my life to show me how I need to be treated as a woman and this and that. But now I realize, hey, those things are really important because I've missed a lot of information or something, you know, a lot of insight that I would have now. I wouldn't be going through these same unhealthy relationships. So I don't know if we need counseling or something, but I would definitely try to work on the black family as a whole. And us, you know, of course, learning more about ourselves, our history. And then I would tell the black community that my message would be that we are gods and goddesses. I think a lot of people are kind of offended or something when I say that, or they think I'm only talking about self or it's some type of egotistical thing. And that's not the case at all. I just think that, you know, we hold so much magic. I mean, we've created so many things. We set trends. And I just feel like we don't even still understand the capacity of that. Like, you know, we're still downplaying ourselves, and we need to be thinking higher. And, of course, if we think higher, then my mega bean can grow to be bigger. But we first got to start thinking that way. So, yeah.
Yes, ma'am. That's what's up. I like Pat. Did you get all of that?
I did. Re-education, reunite the black man and the black woman. David Banner is awesome, and we are gods and goddesses.
The reparations fad. We got to get paid. We got to get the money from somewhere. We already in the hole. Financial literacy, of course, also goes into that.
There you go. Ain't nothing wrong with that. So before we wrap this up, can you give the people your website, your social media links, just all the contact information or whatever they can find you, they can find your magazine and all of your businesses as well.
Okay, so our website address is, of course, http://swagher.net. And swagher is swagher.net. And then, if, of course, that's the website. You can purchase the magazines from there. If you like to read a magazine issue online, then we're on iBooks. And then, of course, we're on Instagram and Twitter as Swagger Magazine. And then on Facebook, we're just Swagger, just the word Swagger by itself. And also, just if anybody's checking out the site, we are doing some updates on the site. So, like, we're changing the outer face, I guess that's what it's called. And so it may look kind of differently when you land on it until we finish with the updates and everything. But I'm really excited about, you know, the changes that are taking place. And, also we do also have our YouTube channel. We don't promote it as much, but we are starting to get more content to go there, whereas the content is actually being uploaded there. So you all can check that out as well. It'll be different interviews and just little segments from different content providers.
Okay. That's what's up. We definitely appreciate you stopping by and taking a ride on the Freedom Train with us because, like I said, we try to do our best to make sure we use our platform to get information, resources, and just entrepreneurs, business professionals, just the black people in our community who are doing things or bringing positivity, just using their platforms to make our community better. We like to extend our platform to them. We definitely thank you for coming through the Freedom Train, giving us some great information. I love your energy. I love your passion and your confidence in yourself. And I know you say that you're still growing, but I know there's a lot that you have learned. So, you know, just continue to do you because it just sounds like it's all good. So continue to do you, you know.
And thank y'all, and thank you so much for having me. Like, I really appreciate this. And also, I have really enjoyed speaking with you all. You know, just I'm learning still, just even as we speak. So I appreciate this opportunity.
No problem, no problem. The pleasure's all ours. Like I said, I love you. Got a great personality, and the conversation was definitely great. So we definitely appreciate you, but we don't want to hold you up too much because you know you got some things to do. So, and it's a Sunday, so you got to get your chill on. So, but thank you for coming through, and I definitely stay, you know, we definitely stay in touch with you. And thank you for allowing me to have my own Shows of Giants blog on your website. So y'all make sure y'all go to swagher.net to check out my own Shows of Giants blog and all the other content that's on there. So I definitely appreciate that.
Okay, well, thank y'all, and peace and blessings.
Yes, ma'am. Peace and blessings to you as well.
Bye-bye.
All right. Yeah, Pat, go ahead, freestyle, Pat, freestyle.
Four old ladies with two broke toes, oh.
There it is, hey, Cardi B ain't got nothing on that.
She don't. Ugh. What's that face she always making? Why she make that face?
Hey, man, she hood in the mud. I was watching a couple interviews that she was doing. She funny, though. She hood. She like one of them girls we went to high school with that it's like every time she open up her mouth, you ready to laugh because you know she going to say something crazy.
Yeah, I've seen her in two interviews. I ain't going to say a lot. And she is amusing. She's humorous.
She's so New York, man.
I just wonder why she be making them faces.
She's so New York. That's that New York dripping off of her, man. That's like Rosa Perez 2.0 or something like that.
Yo, Rosie Perez is nice.
Hey, man.
I realized the creeper just came out. That was kind of creepy. But
swagher.net. Make sure y'all support Fancy, support the platforms that she have, everything. It just, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed talking to her, and I enjoyed the information, so.
No, yeah, that was cool. She had a lot to say. She was definitely cool about it. No, that was good. You done made me want to go look up Rosie Perez now.
Hey, man, do your thing.
I ain't seen her in so long. I ain't seen her since White Man Can't Jump, to be honest.
I definitely enjoyed the Southern twang, too. I like women from the South.
Oh, yeah. It's all, you know, it's always nice, not to disrespect, New York.
We from the South, man. We from the South, though.
It's always nice to get a Southern Belle on the line.
Ooh, that Southern twang, man. I'm telling you. Yes.
We don't disrespect the people.
Nah, black women, period, are great. But I do like that Southern twang. So, hey. So there it is. Hey, man. What's your parting shots, man? You got any parting shots before we close this up?
Power to the people.
Power to the people. Hey, it's cold outside. Make sure y'all put some lotion, some shea butter, some coconut oil, whatever. Moisturize your skin because it's cold outside. I understand you're going to be ashy a little bit, but put some lotion on because it's colder than the mug. And that's the best way to protect yourself against some other stuff is not being extra ashy, but be a little bit of ashy. So, yeah, that's my message to the people. So, y'all stay moisturized and down with ash. Peace.